Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Police killings of black people have sparked nationwide calls this year for more independent oversight of police departments. In the Bay Area alone, at least five ballot measures seek to strengthen or expand the power of police commissions, independent investigations, and other oversight. And in this segment, we'll review what's being proposed. Joining us is KQED reporter Alex Emsley. Welcome, Alex.
Hi there.
Hi. Good to have you with us. Let's begin by talking about, well, the fact that we're not moving toward defunding police, except maybe in one or two of these measures, but more police reform and creating and, as I said, fortifying civilian oversight boards. And much of this, of course, was sparked by the catalyst of seeking racial justice in the wake of police killings. I wonder what you think of these five measures, what rises particularly to the top and what has been getting deservedly the most attention or should have the most attention.
Well, it's interesting, you know, defunding police and whether a particular measure in Sonoma County would or would not do that is part of the controversy around one of these measures that would strengthen independent civilian oversight. Sonoma County Measure P would change the powers of the Independent Office of Law Enforcement Review and Outreach. That office was created in the years following the 2013 killing of 13-year-old Andy Lopez. But Measure P supporters say that it was underfunded and relied on the voluntary cooperation of the sheriff to allow for access and really meaningful oversight. There's an important and extremely concerning case that has just sort of stalled in Sonoma County and is now with the Sonoma County District Attorney. And that is that last November, former Deputy Charles Blount was caught on body camera video violently slamming the head of a man into a car door frame. That man's name was David Glenn Ward, who died after this altercation. Charles Blount also attempted to put Ward in a neck hold through the driver's side window of Ward's car.
And forgive me, Alex, David Ward was indeed disabled, wasn't he?
Yes. He had some medical issues, and there was a struggle. There was also a car chase that sort of preceded this stop. But there was a struggle between particularly Blount and David Ward as he's trying to pull Ward out of the driver's side window of his car. Now, I've spent the past decade investigating police use of force cases, and I have to say that this case and the video from this case is the most disturbing that I've ever seen. I don't recommend that people watch this video. The sheriff did make it public in December of last year, about a month after the incident, as he simultaneously said he was moving to fire Charles Blount. I think it's important for people to know what this video shows, though, and what happened next. Blount retired before he was officially fired or disciplined. He's presumably collecting a pension. And this criminal investigation took several months to be conducted and completed by the Santa Rosa Police Department. The public hasn't seen any of their findings. They have presented those to the DA's office, which has now not made a charging decision for 4 months. Compare that to how quickly we've seen criminal charges in other cases around the country. You mentioned the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Initial charges were filed in that case 4 days after George Floyd's death. But in Sonoma County, the DA has waited for several months. What's more, Charles Blount had a history of misusing neck holds, carotid holds, choke holds. His conduct could and should have been addressed if there was adequate accountability for deputies. That's according to supporters of Measure P. Jerry Threet is the founding director of this oversight office called IALERO for short. He retired in 2019.
With a more robust IALERO that has the ability and the authority to look more closely into these issues and have direct access into their personnel system, the director can look through these matters. So if something comes up with a deputy, she'll be able to go back to all the other cases that deputy was involved in that have been investigated, and also go back to look at all of his uses of force to see what's going on with this deputy. And is this someone who needs to be flagged for greater attention? And if you're able to do that, you can bring that attention to that deputy and prevent the future deaths of other folks.
Now, Threat says that the sheriff has a contentious relationship with Iolero as soon as the office started being critical. The sheriff and the deputies union oppose this measure, and they're arguing that it would defund the sheriff. Supporters of Measure P say that that's misleading. What's true, what the ballot measure actually says, is that it would tie the independent oversight office's budget to the sheriff's budget and say that it has to be 1% of the overall sheriff's budget. But that funding does now and continues to come from the general fund and in no way directly affects the sheriff's budget.
Now, how does this connect, or does it connect, to what's going on in Oakland with the firing of Chief Ant Kirkpatrick, which also became and still is a major issue with respect to the police commission there?
I think it's similar in that this involves independent oversight bodies and sort of either exercising their strength or seeking to have more authority in order to exercise it, right? Oakland measure, it's a S1, touches on several aspects of oversight of the Oakland Police Department, including powers of the police commission, and would create a new and separate from the police department office of the inspector general. That office of the inspector general, for people who have watched OPD for a long time, would know that there is a lot of complicated issues around internal investigations in the Oakland Police Department and federal court oversight that's been going on for well over a decade of the Oakland Police Department. And this inspector general would help and report to the police commission auditing of those issues. It changes timelines for how quickly police misconduct cases should be sort of finally adjudicated by an investigating agency, and makes the sort of the determination of discipline in those cases, when they're serious cases that are also applicable, they can be released to the public under new transparency laws. It makes that timing much quicker. These decisions have to be made faster. And it would allow the police commission to hire independent attorneys. I think that gets into some of this idea that there are parts of Oakland government that are in disagreement over these issues. And you saw that play out with the police commission moving with the eventual support of the mayor to fire former police chief Ann Kirkpatrick, related in part to her position on compliance with this federal court oversight. So I think all these things, yes, they're complicated and they're interrelated. But what Measure S1 would do is generally strengthen the independent oversight, civilian oversight of the police department through these couple of different mechanisms.
And hiring its own lawyers separate from the city attorney's office is a big deal when you think about it in the huge picture that we're talking about here. And we're talking about a number of police reform ballot measures with KQED reporter Alex Emsley. And if you have questions about any of these reform measures or some thoughts about them, you can give us a call. I invite you to do that. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. I'll repeat that for your calls. Join us now at 866-733-6786. And you can also, of course, get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. If you have questions or comments, we're at KQED Forum, or email any questions you may have to forum@kqed.org. Can we talk about D&E in San Francisco, Alex?
Oh, absolutely. So these are different measures involving different law enforcement agencies, but both centered in San Francisco. So D deals with the sheriff's department. It's interesting. San Francisco has what's known in sort of civilian oversight circles, I guess, as one of the oldest and one of the sort of the strongest independent oversight police commissions for the San Francisco Police Department, anywhere around, anywhere in the state. But the sheriff's department, which has, you know, also employs peace officers, sheriff's deputies, doesn't have any sort of similar oversight system. And this measure, just to somewhat overgeneralize in a way, would change that, would create a similar type system for the sheriff's department. I know that the sheriff opposes at least a part of this measure, saying that the independent investigation wing of the police commission, really is how I think of it, the Department of Police Accountability, is already conducting independent investigations. And so that this would be redundant and expensive and create additional headache. The other part role that these new offices, Oversight Board and Office of Inspector General would do if San Francisco Prop D passes is an auditing and a policy recommendation function, which the current sheriff does support. Interestingly, sort of connected to these other measures around the Bay Area, we're seeing an increase in these independent oversight bodies explicitly saying that they have subpoena power. And that would be true if Proposition D in San Francisco passes as well, that this independent oversight would have the power to subpoena records to force the production of witnesses. And now kind of shifting gears somewhat quickly here to San Francisco Proposition E. This has to do with a minimum staffing a number for full-duty sworn police officers in the SFPD. That sounds like a mouthful, but all of those terms kind of mean very specific things. It goes back to the 1990s, and this somewhat cryptic, I've never myself pinned down exactly the origin of the number of 1971 full duty officers, and that the city would be in violation of its own charter if they were employing fewer of those officers at any time.
I had that's an enigmatic to me too. Where did they come up with that number?
Well, you know, I haven't fact checked it about it yet. There's a rumor that I've heard that it was a number that was randomly written on the back of a bar napkin, but I don't know. There may be a much more sort of thought out and legitimate reason for it. I don't know. But at this time, and what proponents of this measure say is that it's become arbitrary. Whether it had a legitimate sort of reason for that number in the past, it's no longer true. And they want to eliminate that sort of mandate and just say the police department will, you know, provide a staffing analysis, staffing reports, which they do a lot anyway, trying to see if the city is in compliance with this and whether there should be more than 1971 officers. But I think the takeaway is this would allow city leaders, including the mayor and the police chief and supervisors and police commission and others, to employ fewer full duty officers, which they can't do now. And I think it fits in with some of the reforms that the mayor and the police chief have started to push forward after the death of George Floyd and after uprisings around the country to divert responses to mental health and some other types of calls away from the police department. So I think this measure is part of that effort. The Police Officers Association in San Francisco certainly opposes this measure, says that the city has not consistently met that minimum mandate and that the police department is understaffed and more police officers are needed.
And we should mention, as far as D, the sheriff, Paul Miyamoto, is opposed to that. Could you say something quickly about the Berkeley measure? Because I found that kind of fascinating in many respects, in the sense that it's going to also establish a new 9-member independent police accountability board with greater authority. It would actually lower the standard of proof on police misconduct.
Yeah. I noticed that too. And adding to this potential confusion around this is that Berkeley has an existing police review commission that has also, you know, been around for quite some time. But it is one that doesn't have the same kind of powers as some of these stronger, I guess, models like the San Francisco model. So, yeah, sort of my broad strokes read of this is this moves Berkeley from that weaker review commission model over the course of a couple of years. I also found it was interesting that this new police accountability board contemplated here, nine-member board with some direct power, subpoena power, auditing power, wouldn't be in place or needs to be in place by early 2022. And in the interim, the Police Review Commission would continue to sort of function and create a transition should Berkeley measure II pass.
Well, that means increased staffing, which means more cost. What about the other measures? Is there going to be cost with those, the ones we've covered so far?
Yes, there is. There is cost. So we jumping back to Sonoma Measure P. I mean, obviously, a lot of the sort of very contentious political debate around that is around an increase of funding to the Independent Oversight Office. It has been, now again, the supporters say it was always significantly underfunded from what it was initially conceived to be and for the duties that it had. This measure, while increasing those authorities and duties, would also increase, it depends on, the ballot measure using an older budget estimates that it would triple this office's funding into more than, you know, close to $2 million. A more recent budget would say that basically that it would be an increase of $500,000. Regardless, the contention comes with that tie-in to basically base it off of what the sheriff's overall budget is. And I should say that is likely a portion of this measure that will be challenged with litigation should it pass. All parties are expecting litigation over Sonoma County Measure P should it pass. And it would likely be challenging this idea of a mandated minimum funding for the civilian oversight body.
Well, thanks to you, Alex. We've done a lot, I think, in helping listeners understand in our election coverage these measures, and we've covered the North Bay and East Bay and the measures actually in San Francisco. But with very little time left, I wonder if you could say something about San Jose and Santa Clara, because they've got Measure G, which would expand police auditors' oversight and review officers involved in shootings and use of force incidents that would result, presumably, in great bodily injury.
Yeah, this looks to me like similar to a change that San Francisco made a few years ago that people may remember. Prior to that change, the civilian investigation wing couldn't initiate an investigation if there was an officer, if there was a police killing or shooting or any other kind of very public and very concerning type of case, unless they received a complaint. So San Jose's Measure G is sort of allowing the independent police office auditor there to sort of proactively initiate investigations in those kinds of serious cases. And again, giving more power, more automatic access to records and evidence and sort of internal and largely secret records of the police department as these investigations are being conducted. That is, you know, there's controversy in San Jose as well around the role of the independent police auditor and previous, you know, more proactive directors of that office trying to proactively investigate or at least be involved in investigations or have opinions of investigations of police shootings.
Well, Alex, again, I thank you for all the light you've shed, and now it's up to the voters. Appreciate very much your being with us this morning on Forum. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
We will actually have to say goodbye to you in hopes that you will have a good weekend. I just want to remind you that we'll be preempted next week for at least a couple of days, probably the first 4 weekdays because of the hearings, the confirmation hearings having to do with the Supreme Court. But we're here with you generally Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and another hour of Forum up ahead with Mina Kim. And I thank you for being a part of this first hour of Forum. And remind you that Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Tina Lauerberg, Ariana Prale, Blanca Torres, and Susan Britton. Senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our engineer is Danny Bringer. Intern, Jameson Weiss. Executive editor, Ethan Tovin-Lindsay. And our chief content officer is Holly Kernan. Thank you again for being with us. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, take care of yourselves and take care of those you care about. And take care of each other. And stay safe. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.